obvious to his visitors that greater skill had been required in their capture than if they had been killed in the field. Branches and vines slapped against the car's bodywork as I gunned it down the track, the howl of the turbines outscreeching every other living thing for miles around. "Tell me about these visitors," I said, my throat mic relaying my words to Kawea through the headphones which clamped his skull. "You'll see them soon enough. Did they suggest this clearing as a meeting place?"
"No. That was my idea."
"And they know which clearing you were talking about?"
"They don't have to."
He nodded upwards. I risked a glance towards the forest canopy, and when the canopy thinned for a moment, revealing sky, I saw something painfully bright loitering above us, like a triangular wedge cut out of the firmament. "They've been following us ever since we left the house." "That's not a native aircraft," I said.
"It's not an aircraft, Tanner. It's a spaceship."
We reached the clearing after an hour's drive through thickening forest. Something must have burnt the clearing away a few years earlier. A seriously rogue missile, probably. It might even have been intended for the reptile house. Kawea had enough enemies to make that a reasonable possibility. Fortunately, most of them had no idea where he lived. Now the clearing was beginning to grow back, but the ground was still level enough to permit a landing. The spacecraft stopped above us, silent as a bat. It was delta-shaped, and now that it had sunk lower, I saw that the underside was quilted by thousands of glaringly bright heat elements. It was 50 meters wide, half the width of the clearing. I felt the first slap of warmth, and then, at the edge of audibility, the first trace of an almost subsonic humming. The jungle around us fell into silence. The deltoid came in lower, three inverted hemispheres puckering gracefully from the apex points. Now it was below the tree line. The heat was making me sweat. I held up my hand to shield my eyes from the sun-bright glare. Then the glare shut down, dimming to a dull brick red, and the vehicle dropped the last few meters under its own weight, settling down on the hemispheres which cushioned the impact with muscle-like smoothness. For a few moments, silence, and then a ramp slid down like a tongue from the front. Blue-white glare from the doorway at the top of the ramp threw the surrounding vegetation into stark relief. In my peripheral vision, I saw things scurrying and slithering for shadow. Two spindly elongated figures stepped into the light at the top of the ramp. Kawea stepped ahead of me, towards the ramp. "You're going aboard that thing." He looked back, silhouetted by the light.
"Damn right I am, and I want you with me.
I've never dealt with ultras before."
"Well, now's your big chance."
I left the car and followed him. I had a gun with me, but it felt ridiculous just to be holding it. I slipped it into my belt and never touched it again the whole time we were away. The two ultras at the top of the ramp waited silently, standing in faintly bored postures, one leaning against the doorway's surround. When Kawea was halfway to the parked ship, he knelt down and fingered the ground, brushing aside undergrowth. I glanced down and thought I saw something exposed, like a sheet of battered metal. But before I could pay it any more attention, or wonder what it had been, Kawea was urging me on.
"Come on, they're not known for their immense reserves of patience."
"I didn't even know there was an ultra ship in orbit," I said, keeping my voice low.
"Not many people do."
Kawea started up the ramp.
"They're keeping very dark for now, so they can conduct certain types of business which wouldn't be possible if everyone knew they were here."
The two ultras were a man and a woman. They were both very thin, their near-skeletal frames encased